Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03 on this Thursday, the 7th of August. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us today on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. It is steamy out there as we hit the dog days of summer. That means it's time to kick off pumpkin spice season. We'll cover that in our next segment. But first, United Airlines resuming flights after a technical issue that grounded all mainline operations last night. Service is returning to normal, but some delays are still expected. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Joe Sweeterman, Professor of Public Services and Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Joe, thanks for being with us today. All right, so we've been hearing a lot about this issue with United. What do we know about the cause of the problem that grounded all these flights last night?
Well, we do know it was a tech glitch that had system-wide implications. So we had multiple airports with a full ground stoppage. It's likely the system that sort of interconnects, you know, flight scheduling, crews, airports. Once one little piece of that goes down, of course, everything gets out of whack. And it's really unusual to have an outage this wide. But boy, the FAA is going to look at this because the redundant systems apparently didn't get their job done.
Fortunately, Joe, I was close to the story. I had a wife who was on a United flight last night and getting updates up until about 1 in the morning as an 8 p.m. flight ended up leaving at about 1 a.m. Chicago time. So, you know, unfortunately, very close to the story here. But how is United helping out those who maybe were left stranded? And obviously, you know, we mentioned the ongoing delays today. How is United kind of picking up the pieces here?
You know, I heard lots of reports that there were a lot of hotel vouchers distributed fairly generously. We had, of course, accommodations, rescheduled flights. I looked today, and a lot of flights are pretty running about 25 minutes later. So what they might have done is just push back all the banking, we call it, the arrival departure clusters, back a bit so people still make their connection. You know, there's limits to what you can do with international flights. It gets difficult because people have connections abroad. You're certainly not going to change the global air system because of your outage. But they appear to have recovered okay. But boy, it's been a painful couple days.
And Joe, you mentioned the FAA kind of getting involved here now as well. Just curious where United goes from here in terms of, you know, once we figure out maybe what could have caused this. Obviously, you talk about prevention, ensuring something like this does not happen. Again, what are some of the next steps to in terms of prevention?
Well, you really see airlines have learned. I mean, Southwest had that terrible outage a couple of years ago that just rippled for days. And there were pushes in Congress for the Passenger Bill of Rights legislation that would really clamp down on the flexibility airlines have with lots of financial compensation for people late flights. That didn't happen. So airlines have really learned to staff more. The shortages of staffing has been relieved. So they're able to rebound quicker. And United's response here the day later has been pretty impressive. Of course, you never know until one snowstorm hits this and where things could unravel. But they really have learned to be generous. It's far cheaper than having Congress come down with a big stick.
Certainly, we haven't heard the last of this story, that's for sure. We'll be following it. Thanks so much. That's Joe Sweeterman, Professor of Public Services, Director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University. Coming up 22 years ago, that Starbucks changed fall forever.
Cashing in with conversation, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Believe it or not, pumpkin spice season returns in less than 3 weeks. Starbucks' iconic latte returns the 26th, kicking off fall early with its most popular seasonal drink of all time. Let's now welcome in RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thanks for being with us here. All right, so I just read the forecast. I mean, we're talking highs in the low to mid-90s this week, so it feels a little odd to be talking about pumpkin spice, maybe a little early for fall offerings, but certainly doesn't sound like that at Starbucks, and sounds like they're kind of getting ready to roll this out.
Yeah, it does kind of sneak up on you, doesn't it? And it is true, though. It has been the most successful limited time product for the company over the years. We see it in our foot traffic data. Typically, there's a pretty big pickup, particularly around the launch, which is going to be on August 26th this year. They moved it back from a Thursday launch to a Tuesday launch last year, and I think it was pretty successful with that for them. So, but yeah, it does feel a little bit early, but at the same time, it's a point in the retail calendar where there aren't other product launches they're competing with. I've already seen back to school shopping, so that's a natural attachment with it. So it really does command the spotlight. And obviously, as we've seen in past years, it's kind of spawned a lot of competitors. A lot of the other coffee chains have introduced similar products. And really, it's revolutionized a lot of things in the grocery aisle, too. We see a lot of competing products and a lot of pumpkin spice and similar fall-themed products being launched just because there really is an emotional attachment with it.
I'm glad you touched on that, RJ. My notes here say it was actually 22 years ago that Starbucks kind of got this whole thing rolling, which, you know, file that in the what makes you feel old today category. but and you mentioned, you know, that obviously, you know, other retailers, fast food companies, things like that saw this, saw the popularity, took note. Have we seen that success replicated, you know, similarly to how Starbucks has seen it? I mean, I'm curious as well as if maybe now, you know, you had the pumpkin spice latte and that was your pumpkin kind of go-to. But now if people are maybe getting a little over-pumpkined here, I'm curious kind of what the market looks like besides Starbucks.
Yeah, it's interesting because I a lot of people ask, does it have the longevity? And I think 22 years speaks to it. I do think, even though we've seen variations in other fall-themed products, I do think that this is kind of central to the calendar for Starbucks and other coffee chains. And obviously, we've seen other players replicate it as well. So I think, you know, while certainly, you know, other players have started to do that, I think it stands the test of time, and I think it will continue to play out there. Obviously, there are kind of variations and new innovations that play off the pumpkin spice latte, and I think that'll continue to play out. Maybe it's not for everybody, and they do need some other innovations to really make this work across a broader audience, but it really has a core audience in it. They really come out in full force when the company releases this every year.
And RJ, kind of big picture before we let you go here, when we talk about these seasonal products, you know, whether it is the pumpkin spice latte, you know, the shamrock shake at McDonald's, things like that. What do the numbers show in terms of kind of expanding brand interest and generating revenue throughout the year when these products are not even available?
Yeah, it's a great question, one we've taken a lot of time looking at. And generally speaking, it does attract a wider audience than they normally be coming into these locations. Typically, for the weeks after the launch, we do see a lot of repeat visits, that visit frequencies there. And honestly, it's been interesting looking at the data of this day and age. I mean, there's been so much focus on value within the QSR and beverage category. These innovative products, these seasonal products, and just kind of innovation tends to be a better driver of repeat visits as well. People, when they come in for a value price, they're heavily discounted product. They go in that one time, but maybe don't come back. But for these type of products, they're usually just pretty good repeat visits. So it's been a winning strategy for a lot of chains that's in this category in recent years.
Again, did not have discussing pumpkin spice on the 91 degree bingo card today, but here we are. Thanks so much. That is RJ Hotovy, head of analytical research at Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. Up next, how much are the Chicago Bears really worth? Well, the eye-popping number might surprise you.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, a headline out today from the sports business site Sportico says the Chicago Bears are valued at roughly $8.8 billion. But in reality, their valuation is likely closer to $7.5 billion. Joining us now to explain is Mark Gannis, president and co-founder of Sports Core Limited in Chicago. Mark, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. Great to get your insights. Let's start. That is a pretty steep valuation here. And the way that Sportico may have arrived at that headline and the number there may be a little misleading. What's your read here?
Well, for pleasure to be with you, Andy. What's happened in the NFL and in the NBA, for that matter, is as very small percentages have been sold in the teams and as the values have gone up as they have, We have what many of your listeners will trade bonds will be used to hearing a term called an inverted yield curve. Effectively, the tiny pieces, the very small pieces, wind up selling for more than par, more than what the value of the entire enterprise would be. And there are good reasons for that. The universe of potential buyers for the very small pieces is much larger than the universe of potential buyers for either big pieces or for the entirety. You know, it's a lot easier to pay $200 million than $10 billion, by way of example. The universe is much, much larger for the smaller number. Also, NFL values continue to go up, so it's a good investment. NFL teams all make cash flow. They all make profit, so there's no real chance of any kind of capital calls. And you get the feelings that you and the family have of ownership, you already have in hand for the smaller pieces. So they're all very good reasons, and there's liquidity now, which didn't exist before with private equity being able to buy into the league, and the perception that if you needed to sell, there are parties out there that will be able to buy from you, and you'll be able to either get what you put in or make a profit off of it. All very good reasons at the low pieces, the low shares, which is why those values, they tend to sell for higher than what would be called par value, or what the entire enterprise would sell for. So the Bears right now, in their current situation, probably in the $7.5 billion range. When they go into the new stadium, wherever they build it, then there will be a significant jump in the valuation in the Bears. Of course, then you've got all the cash flows coming in from a brand new stadium. So as we have seen with the Rams, as we have seen with the Cowboys, as we saw with the Patriots, when you move into a new stadium, there's a very significant jump in the asset value of the team.
Definitely great insight, kind of helps break down the headline there. Thanks so much. That is Mark Gannis, president, co-founder of Sports Core Limited. Still ahead in Technology Thursday, social media twists reality. Don't let that curated illusion lead to poor financial decisions.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, but did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. Well, it's been a seesaw day for the financial markets, trending a little lower at this hour. And joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Jeff Kilberg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial in Chicago. Jeff, good afternoon. Thanks for being with us here today. I want to start here with tech stocks. It is Technology Thursday here on the Noon Business Hour. They are outperforming broader markets, led mostly by Apple and NVIDIA. What's your take here on the tech stocks?
Well, Andy, it's interesting to see Apple is finally coming back to resurge as one of the laggards of the year. If you look at the Magnificent Seven, those are stocks that we all love and know so well. But laggards has been Apple. So Apple, in the wake of last week's earnings report, they talked about some form or fashion of an AI commitment. They said that they may buy some AI component to improve Siri. We all know Siri needs improvement, but we have seen Apple go above $220 today. That is definitely helping tech, but we are seeing the overall exhaustion in the marketplace. We saw the S&P 500 hit a new all-time high, as well as the NASDAQ 100 last week. We had positivity this morning, but we had a bit of a disappointing bond auction as we continue to worry about the debt of our U.S. government.
Jeff, I want to get your take as well on President Trump's new semiconductor tariffs and the impact that could have on the broader chip sector, as well as tech stocks overall here moving forward.
I'd say the one thing, Andy, that a lot of us investors and portfolio managers like myself have become more of accustomed to, or I should say conditioned to, is that what President Trump is saying may not last a day, may not last an hour. So we have to continue to find names and companies that we believe are going to have a positive earnings growth. And I think if you look at the semiconductor specifically with that 100% tariff, however, there's been a couple of exemptions. So we're kind of taking it with a grain of salt. We've seen great earnings seasons. Earnings growth is over 10%. So there's a lot of positivity. I think the market's going to continue to move higher. But remember, Andy, the market does not move in a straight line.
Absolutely. A great point there, Jeff. And kind of stepping away from the tech side of it, kind of want to take a broader look here as we cross the midway point of the year. Your preview of kind of the back half here as we look at the markets as a whole, where do you expect things to go?
Well, it's fascinating to see, Andy, the sector dispersion. If you think about the 11 S&P 500 sectors, we're seeing year to date, we're seeing utilities and industrials being those leading names. Of course, technology has a resurgence, but healthcare, it's been really weighing on the market. And today, Lilly had very disappointing earnings. We still like Lilly from a long-term perspective, but down almost 15%. That is what's weighing so heavily on the Dow Jones, down about 400 points, Andy.
You know, I almost want to get your take, Jeff, on the, we talk about tech quite a bit here, but the Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies areas, they have been on quite the run here of late. Your thoughts on that space and if that momentum can kind of carry through the rest of the year?
Well, I think there's a lot of momentum and optimism due to the fact that President Trump is wanting to allow crypto investments in 401ks. So that's just a bigger sea to swim in for some of the cryptos. I do get a little bit nervous, though, as there's so much euphoria in the marketplace. Whenever you see that type of euphoria, either in equities or in crypto, you see a little bit of a pullback here. So I'd be cautious in there. I don't think we're going to see some of the moves that people are anticipating short term before a pullback. But I think bigger picture, there is momentum in crypto.
And Jeff, before we let you go, I don't want to end, you know, on maybe a sour note, but curious to get your take on perhaps the biggest threat to the markets here at the moment and as we head through the rest of 2025.
Well, it's not tariffs. I mean, that's clear, Andy. People have been really worried and upset about tariffs for the last 3-4 months, but tariffs have not been a headwind. I think the biggest threat to the stock market is interest rate policy by the Fed. So we have expectations for an interest rate cut next month, and they'll probably sit and wait. But that Fed policy or potential Fed policy misstep, that's what we worry about short term.
We will certainly be keeping an eye out for that. Thanks so much. As always, that is Jeff Kilburg, founder and CEO of KKM Financial. Up next in Technology Thursday, don't let social media distort your financial reality.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Social media can twist reality, and highly curated lifestyles don't reflect true life. Young people in particular are at a risk of being influenced into making poor decisions based on online illusions. Joining us now to discuss on this Technology Thursday is Craig Bolanos, co-founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners, online at GetRetiredStayRetired.com. Craig, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so those of us on social media see this almost every day when you open up, whether it's X, Facebook, Instagram, what have you. Talk a little bit about how social media can really negatively skew our financial reality.
Well, I mean, social media stars are everywhere, and they're giving financial education, in my opinion, a bit of a hip makeover, but you're right, it's not necessarily all sunshine and roses. And what I mean by that is we've got to look at these wonderful media personalities, and sometimes they're talking about the basics of budgeting. I mean, cash and envelope systems is making a comeback. I think Dave Ramsey is smiling, but there's also some embedded conflicts, because we'll see social media influence influencers pushing certain products or certain strategies that they're getting paid for. And when we don't have disclosure, that creates an embedded conflict that consumers and viewers need to be aware of.
So, Craig, you mentioned that a lot of this is social media stars, influencers, the people that we use social media, see a lot. So we gravitate towards them maybe. But why is it that so many young adults especially are maybe turning now to social media and that's where they're getting some of this financial advice?
Well, it's just a changing marketplace. You know, the information, or what I call the business of advice, you've got to meet people where they are. And very specifically, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just different than it used to be. You know, when I look out to Gen Zs and millennials, some 79%, that means it's the vast majority, are receiving their financial advice from social media platforms. Why? Because that's where they spend their time. That's the reason for the proliferation. And I think it's going to take a while appeal for the broad-based regulated industry to get caught up with all the finfluencers who are so popular today.
So, Craig, when we talk about getting some of this financial advice on social media and even just seeing financial content, what are some of the red flags that people should be on the lookout for that may make them want to, you know, think twice about taking some of that advice?
Well, first, I want to go on record saying I think it's fantastic that we're democratizing information and we're getting people re-involved in their finances and educated. That's empowering. But those red flags are, hey, be cautious and do your own homework. Always do your own homework. So when your favorite finfluencers, social media stars, are promoting a product or a service, there might be a profit motive that's beyond that. Number two, if it sounds too good to be true, as all things in life, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And when you see, it's more rare, but they're out there, avoid some of that content that uses scare tactics to push you or motivate you to do something, because everyone should make decisions that are based on education. People shouldn't make decisions that are based on sentiment, or in this case, fear.
Definitely stuff we should all keep in mind the next time we fire up social media, that's for sure. Great stuff. Thanks so much. That's Craig Bolanos, co-founder, wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners, online at GetRetiredStayRetired.com. Join us at this time tomorrow for Entrepreneur Friday, and still to come, office attendance is surging as companies enforce in-person work.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Office attendance is rising fast, with companies enforcing in-person work at the highest rate since the pandemic. And many are even planning to expand their office space. We welcome in Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern. Rick, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so what is behind the push now by companies? We've seen it kind of, you know, it's been increasing since the pandemic here in recent years. But why now this push for return to office policies more than in previous years?
Well, there's the opportunity because you don't have a pandemic to get in the way of it. And the economy is more uncertain. There's been some contraction in the businesses. So you feel like the leadership is going to say, well, you have better communication, we have better culture and team building, more opportunities to learn and management and accountability. So it's really top of the house sort of preference that causes this move.
And Rick, you know, we've talked a lot as well about vacancy rates being pretty high in some downtown buildings. And yet we were hearing that some companies are even planning to expand their office space. How does that kind of play into this push?
If you look at the aggregate of availability, there's still a lot of vacancies in most of the major metropolitan areas. The study that was done was really one that focused almost exclusively on Fortune 100 companies. That's 12 to 15% of the total U.S. population, but it's not that big a sample. There's more tendency for Fortune 100 companies to want to upgrade, improve their offices and locations. Not so much expand them.
So, Rick, on the other side of this, what does this push to get back into the office, what does this all mean for the workers?
It does put the onus on the worker, because there's a cost, both an emotional and financial cost, for a worker to commute. You know, it's the stress of commuting. It's getting to the train or the bus or whatever you're going to do or drive. It's wardrobe expectations, the meal costs. You're going to need to probably either pack your lunch or eat at restaurants locally, which is great for the economy overall, but it puts the burden on the employee. There are people who are actually much more productive when they can work out their own schedule. That's not everybody. There are people that can't. There's certainly jobs you can't do as effectively when you're doing them by yourself. And then there's a retention issue. For those of the people who are the most desirable and the people you most want to keep have the most options. So they're more easily able to move to another organization that fits their personal needs, because you're impacting quality of life, and that's become more and more important. Certainly generationally, the younger the generations, the more that's an issue.
Really fascinating stuff. We will certainly be keeping an eye on the trends. Thanks so much. That's Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and skip back to the time you'd like. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.
Hey, it's Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst and certified financial planner. You may have heard me dispensing financial advice on the radio before, But did you know you can get my money tips on demand with my podcast, Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger? If you have a question about a major financial decision in your life, this is the show for you. Follow and listen to Money Watch with Jill Schlesinger on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.